Speech Work Document 31. Equity the Keynote of Industrial Reform. From an address delivered at the opening of the Jamestown Exposition, April 26. We cannot afford to forget the maxim upon which Washington insisted, that the surest way to avert war is to be prepared to meet it. Nevertheless, the duties that most concern us of this generation are not military, but social and industrial. Each community must always dread the evils which spring up, as attendant upon the very qualities which give it success. We of this mighty Western Republic have to grapple with the dangers that spring from popular self-government tried in a scale incomparably vaster than ever before in the history of mankind, and from an abounding material prosperity greater also than anything which the world has hitherto seen. As regards the first set of dangers, it behooves us to remember that men can never escape being governed. Either they must govern themselves or they must submit to being governed by others. If from lawlessness or fickleness, from folly or self-indulgence, they refuse to govern themselves, then most assuredly in the end they will have to be governed from the outside. They can prevent the need of government from without only by showing that they possess the power of government from within. A sovereign cannot make excuses for his failures. A sovereign must accept the responsibility for the exercise of the power that inheres in him, and where, as is true in our republic, the people are sovereign, then the people must show a sober understanding and a sane and steadfast purpose, if they are to preserve that orderly liberty upon which, as a foundation, every republic must rest. In industrial matters our enormous prosperity has brought with it certain grave evils. It is our duty to try to cut out these evils without at the same time destroying our well-being itself. This is an era of combination alike in the world of capital and in the world of labor. Each kind of combination can do good, and yet each, however powerful, must be opposed when it does ill. At the moment the greatest problem before us is how to exercise such control over the business use of vast wealth, individual, but especially corporate, as will ensure its not being used against the interest of the public, while yet permitting such ample legitimate profits, as will encourage individual initiative. It is our business to put a stop to abuses and to prevent their recurrence, without showing a spirit of mere vindictiveness for what has been done in the past. In John Morley's brilliant sketch of Burke he lays a special stress upon the fact that Burke more than almost any other thinker or politician of his time realized the profound lesson that in politics we are concerned not with barren rights but with duties, not with abstract truth, but with practical morality. He especially eulogizes the way in which, in his efforts for economic reform, Burke combined unshakable resolution in pressing the colon reform with a profound temperateness of spirit which made him, while bent in the extirpation of the evil system, refuse to cherish an unreasoning and vindictive ill will toward the men who had benefited by it. Said Burke, "If I cannot reform with equity, I will not reform at all. There is a state to preserve as well as a state to reform." This is the exact spirit in which this country should move to the reform of abuses of corporate wealth. The wrongdoer, the man who swindles and cheats, whether on a big scale or a little one, shall receive at our hands mercy as scant as if he committed crimes of violence or brutality. We are unalterably determined to prevent wrongdoing in the future. We have no intention of trying to wreak such an indiscriminate vengeance for wrongs done in the past, as would confound the innocent with the guilty. Our purpose is to build up rather than to tear down. We show ourselves the truest friends of property when we make it evident that we will not tolerate the abuses of property. We are steadily bent in preserving the institution of private property. We combat every tendency toward reducing the people to economic servitude, and we care not whether the tendency is due to a sinister agitation directed against all property, or whether it is due to the actions of those members of the predatory classes whose antisocial power is immeasurably increased because of the very fact that they possess wealth. Above all, we insist that, while facing changed conditions and new problems, we must face them in the spirit which our forefathers showed when they founded and preserved this republic. The cornerstone of the republic lies in our treating each man in his worth as a man, paying no heed to his creed, his birthplace, or his occupation, asking not whether he is rich or poor, whether he tabors with head or hand, asking only whether he acts decently and honorably in the various relations of his life, whether he behaves well to his family, to his neighbors, to the state. We base our regard for each man in the essentials and not the accidents. We judge him not by his profession, but by his deeds, by his conduct, not by what he has acquired of this world's goods. Other republics have fallen, because the citizens gradually grew to consider the interests of a class before the interests of the whole, for when such was the case it mattered little, whether it was the poor who plundered the rich or the rich who exploited the poor. In either event the end of the republic was at hand. We are resolute in our purpose not to fall into such a pit. This great republic of ours shall never become the government of a plutocracy, and it shall never become the government of a mob. God willing, it shall remain what our fathers who founded it meant it to be, a government in which each man stands on his worth as a man, where each is given the largest personal liberty consistent with securing the well-being of the whole, and where, so far as in us lies, we strive continually to secure for each man such equality of opportunity that in the strife of life he may have a fair chance to show the stuff that is in him. We are proud of our schools and of the trained intelligence they give our children the opportunity to acquire. But what we care for most is the character of the average man, for we believe that, if the average of character in the individual citizen is sufficiently high, if he possesses those qualities which make him worthy of respect in his family life and in his work outside, as well as the qualities which fit him for success in the hard struggle of actual existence, that, if such is the character of our individual citizenship, there is literally no height of triumph unattainable in this vast experiment of government, of, and for a free people,